This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. As a young woman, Belle Boyd was considered one of the most charming and lovely young ladies in all of Virginia. And she knew how to use a gun. At the age of 17, she shot a Union soldier in her home and then became a courier for the Confederate Army. Belle Boyd was one of a number of female spies who moved goods and information across enemy lines. Karen Abbott tells the story of four such women in her new book, Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy. She's going to be reading at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tonight, 7 o'clock. But first, Karen Abbott joins me on The State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Tell us about these women. First of all, what got you interested in women spies of the Civil War?
Well, I was born and raised in Philadelphia and moved to Atlanta in 2001 and realized that the Civil War seeped into life down here in a way that it never does up north, enters daily conversation. There were jokes about the War of Northern Aggression and flags on the lawns, Confederate flags on the lawns. And the point was sort of driven home one day when I was in traffic on 400 behind a pickup truck with a bumper sticker that said, "Don't blame me. I voted for Jeff Davis." So I started thinking about the Civil War more in depth, and I wanted to know, what were the women doing? They did not have access to political discourse. They didn't have the right to vote. They couldn't influence battles. And what were the women doing? And I wanted to find four women, two for the North, two for the South, who, you know, lied, avenged, wheedled, flirted, murdered, shot, drank their way through the Civil War. So hopefully I did that in the book.
You did. Were there many of them? You found four, and you wrote about four amazing stories, but how many were there roughly?
Well, the number of spies is hard to determine. There were several levels of spying. You know, there were women who just looked outside their window and counted troops as they passed. And then there were women like Belle Boyd who were charged with gathering and delivering some information. They had a certain level of respectability and access in the Confederate Army or the Union Army. And then there were people like Rose Greenhow and Elizabeth Van Loo who were called upon to deliver and secure certain information and who were really relied upon by their respective governments.
Tell us about the aptly named Belle Boyd.
Well, Belle Boyd was a 17-year-old girl living in the Shenandoah Valley, Virginia, when the war broke out. And she was all id. She was sort of had no filter. I like to think of if, you know, Sarah Palin and Miley Cyrus had a 19th century baby, it probably would be Belle Boyd. There was no filter on any front. And she kicks things off by on the 4th of July in 1861, when Union forces were marching down the Shenandoah Valley, and they planned a victory parade in her hometown of Martinsburg, Virginia. And Belle Boyd was waiting for them to come, and she was waiting for them with a pistol. And they came to her town and started stealing liquor and breaking into homes and generally causing mayhem, and Belle was waiting for them.
Will you read for us?
Sure. Oh, I should say that one of them threatened to raise a Union flag over her home, which was something that neither Belle nor her mother would abide. So. At this, Belle's mother stepped forward. "Men," she said, "every member of my household will die before that flag shall be raised over us." The circle of men contracted, fencing her in. Belle's servant, Eliza, peeked through a latticework of fingers. Belle noticed one soldier at the head of the pack. His arm coiled around her mother's body and yanked her close. He aimed his slack mouth at hers. Belle considered her mother, quote, a very handsome woman, and she knew the Yankees would stop at nothing. There were reports throughout the South of Yankee outrages, as the newspapers called them, soldiers invading homes and destroying property and assaulting women. In Maryland, a border state with a large secessionist population, one woman claimed a Union soldier thrust his hands against her bosom under the pretense of looking for concealed arms. Another Yankee, in broad daylight and on a public street, pinned a girl's arms behind her back and asked, "Is it true that you're the prettiest girl in Baltimore?" Communities beseeched Confederate President Jefferson Davis to send in troops to protect their, quote, defenseless women. Belle did not consider herself one of them. "Let go my mother," she screamed. The soldier looked up at her and grinned. Belle could stand it no longer. Her indignation was, quote, roused beyond control, her blood, quote, literally boiling in her veins. The room seemed to skid to a stop, and Belle became the only moving thing inside of it. Her hand grasped her pistol, finger curling around the trigger. She found a clearing amid the tangle of limbs, her target offering himself up. Letting instinct dictate aim, she bucked from the force of her shot. The circle split, bodies retreating, and there was nothing to break the soldier's fall. Belle heard the terse crack of bone against wood. She saw the blood pulse from his neck. She looked at her pistol in her hand, smoke still wisping from the barrel, and she realized what she had done. She let it slide from her fingers, landing by the toe of her button-up boots. She heard screams, her mother's and Eliza's, sounding miles and miles away. All of her 17 years seemed crammed into those seconds. Her heart scrabbled in her chest. Several soldiers shifted in her direction, threatening to kill her. She returned to herself then, the moment sliding into focus. She remembered who these men were, why they were there, and what they had almost done. She heard herself speak before she had a chance to contemplate her words. "Only those who are cowards shoot women," she said, and spread open her arms. "Now shoot."
Karen Abbott reading from her book, Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy. Going to be reading at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tonight at 7 o'clock. Boy, that takes Betsy Ross the Next Generation, right?
Yeah.
But now, where did you find these accounts with such wonderful detail?
Well, luckily, a few of the women wrote memoirs and were well documented. And Belle, contrary to what one would think a spy would do, did anything to keep herself the center of attention. So she was in the newspapers quite often, and I had a lot of fun gathering really obscure clips about her.
What did she do after that shooting?
After that shooting, she became a courier and spy for the Confederate Army. She claimed self-defense and got away with it and sort of emboldened her. And she became a notorious seductress, seducing both men on both sides of the lines. One Northern reporter said that she was closeted for 4 hours with Union General James Shields and celebrated this conquest by wrapping a rebel flag around his head.
So she and did she what happened to her in the end? Did she ever get caught? Did she?
Oh, she, I will say that Detective Alan Pinkerton, the famous detective, gets on the case of a couple of Confederate spies and goes after Belle Boyd, and there's quite an interesting cat and mouse chase between them in the book.
It is also interesting, we'll talk about Union spies here in a minute, Abraham Lincoln was reluctant to use women as spies. Tell us about that.
Well, it was sort of unheard of for women to be spies at this time. It was the first time, you know, war was always perpetrated by men and women were its victims. And for the first time in history, women were actively and brazenly declaring their loyalty and conducting treasonous behavior and conducting it more deftly than men. One Lincoln official actually said, you know, what are we going to do with these fashionable women spies? So it was a conundrum about how to deal with them and this is something that went on throughout the war.
Well, that brings us to Elizabeth Van Loo, who downplayed her fashion in style. Tell us about her.
Well, Elizabeth Van Loo was a Union spy living in the Confederate capital of Richmond. So she was in a very dangerous position. She was a staunch abolitionist and used all of her money to free slaves and to buy slaves for the express her purpose of freeing them. And neighbors did not trust her. She received several death threats. Confederate detectives followed her. But nevertheless, she went ahead with her plans. And I think her greatest coup in the beginning of her spy ring was placing a former family slave named Mary Jane Bowser in the Confederate White House as a spy, which was quite remarkable. This woman, Mary Jane Bowser, of course, it was illegal to teach slaves to read and write at the time in the South. And Mary Jane Bowser was not only literate, but she was highly educated and had a photographic memory. So while she's dusting Jefferson Davis's desk and picking up the children's toys, she's looking at maps and confidential papers and overhearing conversations. So she was quite a valuable source to have in the Confederate White House.
And that brings us to the effectiveness of women as spies, because as women, men tended not to take them seriously, and as they did not take slaves seriously.
Yeah, that was one of the most fascinating parts of the research, how women used the idea of female gentility as a part of their disguise. Their gender was both a physical and psychological disguise. You know, they sewed up a lot of information up in their skirts. They tied weapons and sabers and pistols beneath their hoop skirts into their crinoline. Even Rose Greenhow, a Confederate spy living in Washington, D.C., would tie up dispatches in her courier's hair in buns. And so the girls would just slip across the lines and nobody would even have any idea. So it was definitely a physical disguise in that regard. And psychologically, if anyone accused these women of traitorous behavior, the ready and immediate answer was, how dare you? Accusing me of being in league with the enemy is beneath the conduct of an officer and a gentleman. And I am a defenseless woman. And of course, they were the furthest thing from being defenseless women.
Yeah, after reading your book, I realized that were it not for the hoop skirt, it might have been a very different war.
Yeah, I agree with you. The hoop skirt and women's appearances at the time were integral to their success as spies.
Emma Edmonds is someone who disguised herself very well. Tell us about her.
Well, Emma Edmonds had an interesting life. In the years leading up to the war, she fled Canada and fled an abusive home situation and decided to start living as a man. And she cut her hair and bound her breasts and wore a suit and started calling herself Frank Thompson and enlisted in the Union Army in the spring of 1861. And she was one of about 400 women, both North and South, who disguised themselves as men to fight.
And she also disguised herself as a runaway slave, did she not?
Yes. Emma, later on in the war, was used undercover several times in missions. And I think her adaptability served her well, and she was able to put on many different disguises.
And again, this idea, she got a lot of information as a runaway slave, again, because people weren't taking slaves seriously.
Yeah,
right?
So invisibility.
If you're African-American or if you're a woman, people are talking around you.
Exactly. It's sort of you're not so much above suspicion as below it. You're just not valid and you're not visible.
Interesting story about her, because she was wounded during the war, and that created a problem for her because she had passed as a man.
Exactly. She lived in constant fear of being examined by medical doctors and being caught. And every time she was wounded, which was quite often, she saw some of the bloodiest battles of the war and suffered during those. She was terrified of going to the doctor and so suffered in silence.
And our final Confederate spy is Rose O'Neill Greenhow. You referred to her a little bit earlier. She was one who was actually tried, right? Caught and tried.
Yes. She was another one of Alan Pinkerton's targets. I would say public enemy number one for the Union for quite some time. And Rose O'Neill Greenhow was this widow living in Washington, D.C., and sort of the opposite of Elizabeth Van Loo. And in spring of 1861, a Confederate captain asked her to operate a spy ring in the Capitol. And she began cultivating sources. And by cultivating, I really mean seducing. Like Bell, she was a notorious seductress. And one of her reported paramours was Senator Henry Wilson of Massachusetts, who was a high-ranking abolitionist Republican and even the chairman of Lincoln's Committee on Military Affairs. So you can imagine they had some interesting pillow talk.
So he got the affairs right, the military not so hot. And that turned out
exactly.
to be a problem for him. She, again, the hoop skirt proved to be her undoing. She was sent by Jeff Davis as an ambassador to Europe, right?
Yeah, that was unprecedented. It was the first time an American president sent a woman to lobby on behalf of his government. And she met with several European dignitaries trying to gain legitimacy and respect for the Confederacy overseas.
The book is Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy. The author is Karen Abbott. She is my guest today on The State of Things. She'll be reading tonight at Malaprop's in Asheville. She also she was there in Europe. She was coming back with some gold under her skirt, and that proved to be her end, right?
Yeah, you know, it was the ultimate sacrifice. Rose refused to go back to prison. She said, "I would rather die than go back to a Yankee prison." They tortured her while she was there as much as they could torture a woman. And her jail experiences are quite interesting. She gave the ultimate sacrifice for her cause.
You talk about this as being an important moment, a kind of pivotal moment for women's rights in America. Tell us about that.
Well, I think the whole outlook of women changed, the way that they were able to seize power and sort of redefine what a woman's role was, especially in the South. The idea of women's gentility and women, the Southern Belle, sort of dissipated. Union soldiers often talked about Southern Belles spitting at them and dumping the contents of chamber pots in their heads and started calling them she-rebels. And it was a whole new idea that women could be assertive and angry and aggressive in this way. And behavior also sort of carried on past the war, just the idea that women were independent. There were 60,000 widows left in the South after the war, and a lot of these women didn't care if they remarried. They didn't care if they were widows or spinsters, and that was an entirely new revelation to them, the idea that they could be single and not depend on a man. And the men who did come home, many of them were amputees. So the women, by default, had to take charge of the household and work and redefine family life after the Civil War.
How much of their stories is on the public record? You talked about some newspaper articles in the most notorious cases. How much of it on the public record, and how much of it had to be gotten through diaries and memoirs and sort of personal writings?
Well, I spent quite a bit of time in the National Archives, where Rose O'Neill Greenhow's papers are, and it was fascinating to sift through the seized correspondence, all of the things that Alan Pinkerton found in her house, including the scrap of information that she tied up in her courier's hair right before the first Battle of Bull Run that won that that battle for the South. Spent a lot of time at the New York Public Library, where Elizabeth Van Loo's papers are, and actually saw her death threats, some of the death threats. There was one from a group called the White Caps. It was a white supremacist group that said, please give us some of your blood to write with. So really chilling stuff. And that was the most exciting part of the research. And I also happened to talk to one of Elizabeth's descendants, well, a descendant of her brother, and he gave me some new information that had never been published before about her incredible operation.
Interesting and also ingenious kinds of work. I mean, for instance, Rose O'Neill Greenhow, Jefferson Davis suggested that she was responsible for the victory at Manassas, the amount of information that she got. So it wasn't that their work was fairly significant.
Oh, absolutely. These women definitely contributed. I would say, you know, maybe some more than Belle Boyd, perhaps. But Belle was interesting in her rank. But Elizabeth Van Loo and Rose O'Neill Greenhow were definitely important spies for their sides and contributed, changed the course of the war.
Who was it? Now I've got them confused. I think it was Rose who actually put bottles of special ink to be found. She wasn't using that.
Yeah.
It was used often to send coded messages. She wasn't using it. She left it there to kind of fool her people like Pinkerton, right?
Exactly, which was, you know, just gives you an insight into how ingenious she was. She was trying to throw everybody off her scent, but she used a cipher. That was her primary mode of communication.
Great stuff. Karen, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Karen Abbott, the author of Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy, Four Women Undercover in the Civil War. She's going to read tonight at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville. She'll be there at 7 o'clock. You can find out more information, anything you missed. We've got links to the films and links to the books and also to the art installation, all of that at our website, stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.